This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Lady Justice is blind, and she isn't perfect. The system of crime and punishment is flawed, and mistakes are made. That's why there are safeguards of appeal built into the process, but these corrections are infrequent, and they are slow. Is that what's happening with the San Antonio Four? Four local women who were convicted in 1994 of sexual assault on two children. Now, many believe there was no crime and they were wrongly convicted. Last year, they were released from prison, but their names still carry that conviction, and they have to deal with the threat of maybe being sent back to prison. On Wednesday, they have a chance to completely be exonerated. What questions do you have for the San Antonio Four about the system that failed them but seeks now to set things right? Is this case the outlier, a rarity, or does this type of conviction happen all the time? Call in. We want to hear from you. This number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at tprsource. Now, in the studio, we have the four of the San Antonio Four with us in the studio. So I want to ask you to introduce yourselves. I know that y'all are sharing a mic because we're short on mics here, but Anna, go ahead, introduce yourself.
Anna Vasquez.
Elizabeth Ramirez.
Hello, everyone. I'm Cassandra Rivera.
Kirstie Mayhew.
And our attorney?
Mike Ware.
Mike Ware. Okay, so we have the San Antonio Four here. We're going to explore what happened, your experiences, and what could happen next as Wednesday approaches. And so let me ask you, attorney, Mike, what are the stakes on Wednesday? What's going to happen? What is the legal process that happens on Wednesday, and what are the stakes?
Well, procedurally, we're at the post-conviction stage at this point. We filed what's called an 1107 writ of habeas corpus, and the Bexar County District Attorney's Office has agreed that the trial that each of these four women received back, one trial was in 97, one was in 98, was unfair because of some inaccurate medical evidence testimony that was given.
The pseudoscience of the scarring of the hymen of the young girl.
Well, it wasn't considered pseudoscience then. It
but
was
now
considered
we know.
Science. It's but science has and studies have developed such that we now know, and the pediatrician who testified to that concedes that what she testified to back then was in fact inaccurate, and we know it's not true. And that was, of course, a very powerful part of the trial. Any time that there is an expert, a physician, a doctor that testifies to sure medical scientific evidence of a sexual assault, physical evidence, it's very powerful both in and of itself and the corroboration it gives to any what otherwise may be questionable testimony.
Okay. So now we know that was not of the real deal, but now we know today.
Right.
So what's happening on Wednesday?
Well, there's going to be an evidentiary hearing, and there are other grounds for relief that we've asked for, and we're asking for a judicial finding of actual innocence, which is a little bit different than just they didn't get a fair trial. We're saying not only did they not get a fair trial, but they are actually innocent of all charges.
So completely wipe the slate clean. That there will be nothing on their records in regards to this event. Is that what we're seeking?
Yes, that's what we're seeking, and the process really starts on Wednesday.
And these women spent years in prison. Frequently we hear about people being compensated for wrongful convictions. Is that also part of the equation?
It could be. That's way down the line and is certainly a way secondary consideration. The main thing is to get their names cleared of this crime that they were wrongfully convicted of.
Okay, so the women are here, so you can speak for themselves. How do you feel about even being called San Antonio Four? Is that weird that you were like, you know, we've gone around, they've introduced themselves, and we know the name. So Anna Vasquez, tell me, what is it like to be defined as the San Antonio Four?
Wow, I really don't know how to answer that, to be honest with you. But in a sense, it's almost an honor. I mean, granted, the charges and you know what we were convicted of is terrible, but at the same time, I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at us as being a way to open up the doors for many other people, you know, that were wrongfully convicted and are sitting still in prison at this moment, you know, and I want us to be referenced back to as the beginning, you know, and that's the way I take a look at it. So in a sense, it is an honor.
So Cassie, you and the three others, y'all are a group. Do you feel like you will be this group forever? You will never, ever, there's always going to be a sisterhood here.
Yes, sir, there is. As it was, we were close in the beginning, and I believe we're going to be close to the end. I think this has just brought us closer together. We've all stood strong. We continue to stay strong. We know if we need anyone, we have each other, and it's forever.
I can imagine, like, or I have to imagine, that, you know, after you guys got out of jail, any kind of mishap, any kind of glitch could have been problematic for any one of you being out late drinking or whatever, things that people do all the time suddenly becomes magnified and becomes a big deal for you guys and could tarnish any one person, could tarnish the other three. Did y'all feel a lot of responsibility towards each other and trying to make sure that you didn't trip up? And Elizabeth?
Yes, I believe that we all kind of like helped each other out, and if there was anything, we supported each other and made sure that we took care of each other and that we were all on the same page and knew that our lives were at stake, so we're responsible.
So we frequently hear about this thing called the prisoner's dilemma. The police have two prisoners, and they're trying to get one to rat out the other prisoner and turn him in, and it's all dependent upon the distrust that people have of each other. And did that happen during the prosecution? Did they try to get one of you guys to flip and spill the beans and rat out everybody else and saying, yeah, I would get a plea deal. Everyone else is going to go away for a long time. Did that happen? I mean, anyone want to talk to that? You're looking at me nodding and knowingly, but, you know.
Yeah, well, we all, I mean, they tried with all four of us. They did actually offer us deferred judification probation. None of us took it.
If you would squeal on the other ones. That's like make something up.
Right.
Turn.
Or disagree or just say that, yeah, they would have done it.
Right. And that speaks that the prisoner's dilemma failed on you guys. Speaks to the bond that you have. We're going to keep talking with this group, the San Antonio Four, when we come back from this break. If you got a question or a comment, we want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. This is a case that shocked and rattled San Antonio over and over again when it first made headlines. Now we're finding out the more facts and how this is a case that there wasn't the evidence, and this is based upon some very peculiar testimony. We're going to get to that and more when we come back from the break. This is The Source on KSTX. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. In the studio, we have the San Antonio Four with us, also their attorney, Mike Ware. He has been representing them for quite a while now. San Antonio Four are Christy Mayhew, Anna Vasquez, Cassie Rivera, and Elizabeth Ramirez. And they were convicted in 1994 of a sexual assault on two children. There's been they're out of prison because there's so much doubt about this case. And on Wednesday, it goes to and there's a hearing where they could be totally exonerated of this charge. It brings up a lot of questions about our political, our criminal justice system, and about the state of mind that was shared in 1994 when this was brought to trial. A lot of innuendo or outright accusations that there was some demonic stuff that was going on at the time. Christy, can you kind of talk about what happened? What happened when you were on trial and those accusations that were brought up about there was some sort of demonic involvement here?
I couldn't even believe the accusations. And, I guess at that time, that's kind of what was going on with a lot of other people in their cases. And, nothing like that ever happened.
Today we hear this, the fact that y'all were some sort of satanic, what, a coven, you know, of, and that y'all were doing things to these children, and there was a rage. There was other cases like this around the country. This was not an isolated case. And particularly, this was targeted people who were members of the LGBT community as well, and that also became part of the prosecution. And it, I mean, they zeroed in on that. You know, how did that factor into things?
Well, back in the day, back in the 90s, LGBT was, I mean, it wasn't in good light like it is nowadays. So, you know, back then people were perverts, people were frowned upon, especially in the San Antonio area. I mean, this is a conservative city. So for them to actually, I think what it was is that four lesbian women, and they just turned it automatically into a satanic ritual, cult, whatever you want to call it. But there's never been any kind of basis on that. You know, I mean, we, you know, don't worship the devil. We were all church going, you know, and it was in our background. You know, we were raised through the church. And it's just, it's really upsetting that somebody would say that we had done some demonic rituals and sacrifice these little girls.
Is that part of the interest in trying to get the exoneration, to show that this is so beyond belief that to get this off the record means getting that off the record as well, Cassie?
Yes, it's terrible. We want everybody to see, you know, all the inconsistencies, everything that was so wrong, everything that was said about us. Like Anna said, we were all raised, you know, in Catholic homes. It's amazing that people would even say something about us like that. And we do want people to know, just because we are who we are, you know, we choose to be who we are, you know, whatever people want to call us. We are happy. We're proud. We're not bad people, you know. And we want people to know that just because we are who we are, we don't commit crimes. We don't hurt people. You know, we just want to live a normal life. The reason for the exoneration is because we do want our names cleared completely, and we want to help people who are in a situation such as ours. You know, and, you know, we love the people that are in our community. They've been down for us. They've helped us so much, and we want to do the same for others.
Our phone lines are open. If you've got questions for the San Antonio Four and their attorney about this case and about cases like this, we want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. And let's take a call now from Ruben. Ruben, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time. Just a brief comment I had. I think it's a shame what these girls are having to go through, no matter what their background is. But I think a lot of the problem lies within our DA, district attorney. And I've seen it countless times where they hide stuff. They're not reporting all the facts that could possibly be there. And people, innocent people, end up going to jail. And this is a big problem that I've seen in other cases, because I read these all the time in the paper.
Okay, Ruben, thank you so much. I appreciate your call in. So the prosecutor in the case was Phil Kazin. He's now a district judge. And let me ask you, Mr. Ware, the attorney, any accusations that there was any prosecutorial misconduct?
You know, I think the point is now, I mean, this was prosecuted in 97 and 98, began investigated in 94. I think we're all different people now than we were back then, and I can say that this DA's office has been completely above board in this reinvestigation. I don't practice here regularly in Bexar County, but I can say my experience in this case, in the post-conviction phase of this case, the DA has been very upfront and above board with us.
Right. So the DA at the time, was that Susan Reed? Or was
no.
that Hilbig?
No, it was
Hilbig.
Yes.
Stephen Hilbig.
Yes.
Okay, he was the DA at the time. And so that was the district attorney prior to Susan Reed. But today, if a prosecutor stood up there and started saying, "Well, you're a lesbian, aren't you?" You know, like that's what he was saying during the trial. And I mean, correct? That's what he.
There was some element to that.
I mean,
yes.
He flat out and said, "You are a lesbian." Asked him point blank, and they and got a response off the on the witness stand about that.
He in the first trial, that's correct. He was not involved in the second trial.
Talking about Kazin?
Yes.
Right. But today, if that happened, wouldn't someone stand up and say, "I object"? Why is this even being discussed?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, the times were different back then. The thoughts were different back then. There was a lot of ignorance surrounding gays and lesbians back then. And I think there was a terrible misunderstanding back then that if someone was gay or lesbian, that made them more prone to be pedophiles. And that's not true at all.
Right. We have the scientific
evidence.
In fact,
the data is just the opposite.
And so, but we know better, so we do better today. But we are locked with the consequences of these things for decades because we sent people to prison based upon that information and those assumptions that we made back in the 90s and 80s and so on. And now we're learning better, and so are these, you know, what's happening with the San Antonio Four? How many other folks are like that in prison? So, you know, Cassie, were there other women that you knew in prison that would tell you stories, and you'd say, that's my story too?
A lot of women approached me when they found out, you know, what we were incarcerated for. Our lives were always open because we wanted people to hear our story. And, of course, that was kind of hard in prison because you were judged by your crime. They didn't know if you were innocent or if you were guilty. But we talked a lot about it, and we did run into people that would come to us and tell us that they were innocent. And that's why I say we want to be the ones to help people like us or like that. Because, yes, there were several times that somebody would tell me that they were accused of something similar.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines with Kathy. The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to call in. Hi, Kathy. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Kathy Marston. I'm a director of Free Better Texas Women. And I just first want to say congratulations to the San Antonio Four, to Anna and Chris and Kathy and Elizabeth for making it this far, and wish you well in the rest of the process. I have a comment to make about the statistics on women incarcerated and then a question couched within that. While incarceration has increased overall for men and women, it's increased 303% and 576% for females. And here in Texas, we have an extra problem with women being arrested on a larger basis on domestic violence-related offenses than men, even though, like the San Antonio Four, they're innocent. There's kind of a double standard built into the justice system in our society, where often men aren't prosecuted, and women who are their survivors have to go and go through the civil process, but then you get someone like like these ladies who are innocent, they're falsely prosecuted, and then they get really huge sentences. And the question I have, it's for all of the ladies, it's also for Mr. Ware. How can we get our state legislature, our state innocence projects, because I believe these ladies are some of the first women who've been exonerated by the Texas Innocence Project. How can we get cases reviewed in the area of wrongful arrest of battered women? Sarah Jeanie Levine was recommended for a pardon back in the early 90s, yet her case is still in front of the Innocence Project, and it's only back in front of the Innocence Project because of the arson-related review. What can we do about this sort of double standard that's built in, which is what you're talking about with the lesbian witch hunting and things like that?
Kathy, don't go away. I want to ask you a couple of questions. First of all, we'll get to your question in a second. But so we've seen the statistics of the growth of women being incarcerated in Texas, and even here in Bexar County, how the Bexar County Sheriff's Office is scrambling trying to find more women's guards to deal with this phenomenon. And when I ask them why do they think this is, I get blank stares. They had said, "We don't know." I mean, so why are we seeing the growth in women in jail?
Sheer sexism, you know.
Sexism, how? I mean, sexism has always been there.
Well, sexism has always been there, but you can't ever take it out of any of the process, from the way the police look at things, when males who are police officers are four times more likely to have active or recent domestic violence charges themselves, to prosecutors who again, we'll look at things with a tainted lens.
So you're saying there's like a double standard, that when women mess up, that they're going to get hit harder by the law?
Right, and women don't even have to mess up. 20% of the time in the state of Texas on a domestic violence call, for example, according to the Texas Council on Family Violence, the police arrest the battered woman instead of the male batterer. We have, for example, a self-defense waiver built into the Texas Penal Code in Section 9.31, and it applies to women, too, but you wouldn't know that looking at the way the cases are being handled by the police and the prosecutors. That's just one example. And this, technically, this case with the San Antonio Four is a domestic violence-related case. If I remember right, Cassie's the aunt of the little girls who are now adults who were the accusers,
it's,
right?
Elizabeth. Elizabeth Ramirez. So let me get back to your question because we're running out of time here. So you want to know what the legislature is doing? Is that it?
Well, I have gone to legislature twice on the cause of wrongful arrest of battered women, and there's trying. My question is, how can we get, you know, all these cases that have to do with women? You know, we need to stop this at several. How can we stop it at the arrest level, the prosecutorial level, and then the level that Mr. Ware and these ladies are at now, the post-conviction level?
Okay.
What are their opinions on what it would take?
So, Mike, what do you think? If there is a bias in the system that is targeting women, how can that bias be compensated for?
You know, I'll have to defer to her statistics and her data on that. I guess I've never been confronted with that issue about a bias against women in the criminal justice system. I can say just in general, I mean, we are, the Innocence Project of Texas, we are somewhat active at the legislature. We're not all that well funded. And I can say that non-DNA cases such as this case, and such as most cases are where there are claims of actual innocence, non-DNA cases take a long time and are very difficult to investigate.
Okay, we're going to take a break for NPR News, and then we'll be right back. We're going to continue with the San Antonio Four. We'll get to your calls and questions, and we'll also hear from some other people involved in the story. This is The Source on KSTX. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We have the San Antonio Four with us in the studio. These four local women were convicted of a sex crime against two young children. Many are convinced that the crime never happened. And now on Wednesday, they go back into a courtroom, this time to seek exoneration, to have the event totally cleared from their record. We're going to be joined now by Maurice Sciama. He's a staff writer for the Marshall Project, a nonprofit online news source that's dedicated to criminal justice issue. And Deb Eskenazi, she is a documentary filmmaker working on the San Antonio Four case. And welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Hi. Good to be here.
Thank you.
Maurice, you've been covering this case for a while. What do you think what's going to happen on Wednesday?
I think that Wednesday is going to be a really fascinating sort of moment for this broader history that we were talking about earlier of these satanic ritual abuse cases from the 80s and 90s. You know, throughout the country, a lot of people have been exonerated for these crimes that sort of sound so outlandish that people really, you know, kind of come to wonder whether they ever happened. But not all of those people have been exonerated in San Antonio Four are sort of the best-known example. And it'll be a kind of very clear sort of public moment where, you know, newspapers will be covering it, and the women will sort of be able to kind of present their what happened to them in a very kind of clear way. And then the women who originally testified against them and accused them of these crimes will, at least in theory, be kind of confronted. And one of them has recanted, so it'll be a sort of clear narrative end, one would hope, to this kind of long saga that might bode sort of well, hopefully well, and hopefully not poorly for other kind of similar cases around the country.
So, Deb Eskenazi, talk about your documentary about these four women. What is the story that you focus on?
Sure. Well, you know, in terms of the broad strokes, like what you guys were talking about earlier, the issues, the sort of the zeitgeist of homophobia or some of the satanic panic issues, you know, from a filmic perspective, I was really interested in visualizing the sort of early question of how this happened and the interior lives of these women. And early on, I received a VHS tape, which had video home footage shot by the women, and something about that footage really just grabbed me. And one of them is Anna Vasquez and Cassie Rivera going off and trying to find exculpatory evidence, going back to the quote-unquote scene of the crime. And there was something in that action, also the day in which they turned themselves in, that's 2000, and the times that the women are sort of advocating for themselves in the year 2000. And something in that early footage was like, wow, this is really a story of four innocent women doing anything that they can to save themselves. And it just, in terms of, there's the moral question, the ethical question, and also the issue of family and love and friendship and all the kind of things I think that make an interesting film.
Maurice, as you've been doing your reporting on the story, you actually sat down with Javier Limon. He is the father of the two girls who made the accusations. And there are those folks who say that he is the person that conjured up the accusations for his own personal agenda. Is that what did you find?
Yeah, the magazine story that I published on their case was called The Mystery of the San Antonio Four, because when I went into it, there had been these accusations that Javier had coached his daughters to make the accusation. And one of the daughters has since said that this is what happened. Stephanie, his daughter, has recanted her accusation, did it on film, actually, with Deb holding the camera right there. And Javier has sort of not given a lot of interviews, and I spoke with him a couple of times over the past year and a half, and you know, he still maintains that he did what any father would do, that his daughters came to him and said that these things had happened, and that he then took his daughters to the sort of proper authorities, again, like any parent would do. And there are sort of versions of the story of what happened that that clear him of wrongdoing. There are also plenty of ways to imagine it in which he was the one pulling all of the strings. And I think what has kind of continually compelled me about this case is that sort of the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know, that there are so many aspects of this case that are going to be mysterious unless someone kind of comes out and says them. And I think on Wednesday, some more about what kind of happened back then might come out. And that's sort of part of the reason that this is so endlessly fascinating. But Javier has sort of remained this very kind of elusive player in all of this, who has been suspected of the worst, but also has, you know, kind of defended himself in the public record. He's commented very, you know, openly about this. So.
Right. He's not here to defend himself or to speak for himself. And so I don't want to try to paint him in any one way or the other. But we do know that he was the person who did. He was the father of the children and was involved in presenting the stories to the police, which have been at least recanted by one of the children. Why not the other girl? What's the other girl say?
The other girl, as far as we know, she has never given an interview to any media, as far as I know. And where it stands now is that she has never recanted. So sort of the kind of official public record on that is that she still maintains that this all really happened the way that it was described in 1994. And we might hear from her on Wednesday. We might not. We sort of don't know. There are kind of rumors floating around about it, and I'll certainly be there.
Deb, you're a documentary filmmaker. You've been working on this film. What do you see your role as in bringing justice forth? I mean, there has been a lot of public pressure and on this case. Do you see yourself as a cog in the wheel of justice?
I do in this case. I mean, in the sense that, you know, when we received the sort of recantation on camera, I was there with filming with Jeff Blackburn and Mike Ware from the Innocence Project. I felt like it would have been very easy to keep that footage and save it for later, kind of a thing. But it just felt, I don't want to use the word unethical. That's a little strong. I had an opportunity, and I was approached by some advocates in Austin saying, you know, if you want to put on a screening, you could just show a bunch of raw footage. And I thought, you know what, let's do it. Let's see what happens. And so over the course of, you know, 3 years, I feel like we went from, you know, just a few people. And actually, the first screening we had was in San Antonio. Maybe, you know, mostly family came. And then suddenly, by the last screening we had of just the raw footage, we had about 250 people at the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center. So, you know, in 2016, when the film is out, you know, I feel like there's a lot we didn't show, like the sort of footage of the women early on, but also all the sort of recantation, all the details of the issues that we're covering. So, yeah, I see myself as sort of, I believe, helping in some way to help the women.
And Maurice, over at the Marshall Project, where y'all look at the criminal justice issues, do you see this case as an outlier, or is this a template for so many other cases that are out there?
In a way, it's kind of both, by which I mean that, you know, it is somewhat rare to have a case with four defendants, to have four defendants who have maintained their innocence so clearly from day one, to have accusations that are so outrageous and so unbelievable, to have kind of aspects of homophobia so present. I mean, there are ways in which it is kind of so exemplary that it's almost unique, if that makes sense. But also, you know, there are a lot of cases out there of people who went to prison for a long time on accusations of crimes that sound sort of impossible today, with these sorts of kind of satanic elements, ritualistic elements.
Maurice Sharma, I got to let you go. Thank you so much, staff writer to Marshall Project, Deb Eskenazi, documentary filmmaker working on a story about the San Antonio Four. We're going to take a one-minute break, and we'll get back to talking to the San Antonio Four. The number is 210-614-8980.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, we'll take up the gyrocopter pilot's complaint, big money politics in America on the road to 2016 and what to do about it. Plus, New York Times columnist David Brooks on finding moral character in a self-preoccupied society. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
You can hear On Point tonight from 7 to 9 on News and Views at 89.1 KSTX.
Support for KSTX comes from the WellMed Charitable Foundation, offering nationally recognized programs at no cost to help families caring for an older loved one. Learn more at caregiversos.org.
You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about this iconic case of the San Antonio Four here in San Antonio. Many of us remember the story when it was first in the newspapers back in the late 90s, when the accusations were first made in 1994. The women have been, there's so much doubt about the case that they have been released from prison. And now on Wednesday, they will be seeking to have their names exonerated from this terrible stigma of having sexually assaulted two children. Let's get back to talking with Christy Mayhew, Anna Vasquez, Cassandra Rivetta, and Elizabeth Ramirez, and their attorney, Mike Ware, lawyer for the San Antonio Four. Mike, when you go to the 175th on Wednesday, the courtroom, and for this hearing, who are you going to be arguing against? Will the DA's office be up there making a case to send these women back to prison?
Yes, the state of Texas is the other party to this case, as represented by the district attorney's office. Because of the posture the case is in, the burden is on us to go forward with the evidence. The burden is on us to establish by clear and convincing evidence, which is a very high burden, that these women are not only did not receive a fair trial, but that they are, in fact, historically, factually innocent.
Nico LaHood, the now DA of San Antonio, has he indicated if they are going to make an argument?
You know, I will let him answer that question if he chooses to. You know, it's an adversary system, and to some extent, I can't predict what the other side is going to do.
But it is his option. He could decide we'll be present, but we will not argue. And or they could put up a very spirited defense or a prosecution.
His oath of office, as any oath of office for a prosecutor, is to seek justice and seek the truth. And I feel that he takes that very seriously, and I'm sure that's what we'll see on Wednesday. Whatever he thinks is the just course to take.
Elizabeth Ramirez, You have been at the center of this the whole time. These were your nieces that made the accusations, and this was Javier Limón was connected to you. Have you had any contact with those nieces at all? Can you talk about that, even on just in a familial way? Or you kind of cannot even see your own nieces because of this?
You know, I can say briefly before she answers the question that generally in a case like this, when someone is released on bail, as they have been on bond, it is a term or condition of bond that they have no contact with any witness in the case. I know that the niece who has recanted has specifically and emphatically wanted to at some point meet with the four women and apologize to them, and the judge in this case did waive that requirement and allowed contact between the niece who has recanted and these four women. And there has been an apology made by the niece who has recanted. Liz can you know, elaborate on that if she so chooses.
Do you want to add?
It was kind of difficult at first. It was the first time I'd seen her since our court hearing. But it was the same thing, like I've told her, that I've never held any anger towards her in any way. And just kind of listened to her apology and tell me how sorry she was for taking all our lives and not being able to be there with our family, my son, and the girls as well.
And it's like one more tragedy upon tragedy in this case is that, I mean, these are nieces that you were close to, and you lost them in a way, at least one of them. Hopefully that's going to be something can be restored.
That's correct.
So, and Cassie, you were just there. I mean, you were part of, I mean, we're waiting for the results of the exoneration before we can, but you were allegedly just there, right?
Right.
How does it feel to be, I mean, you, and then you went to prison. You were in jail for years. How did you live in prison? How did you focus? How did you manage your mind in that situation?
It was very hard because I left my son and my daughter behind. They were my life. They remained my life. So it was difficult. I had to find ways to get through my time. You know, my family visited me. They would visit me frequently, thank God, because I don't know what I would have done if they hadn't. I had to watch my son and my daughter grow up behind a glass. But at least I was able to see them, because that's not something that others are granted. But, you know, by the grace of God, we remain close. We're still very close, and I have them in my life every day.
Christy, when you were in prison, of course, sexual assault on a child, that's the worst thing a person can be accused of in prison. How did you defend yourself against that when people brought, you know, threw that in your face?
Well, really, you're told when you go in the system not to really discuss your charge, especially a charge like ours.
It's a high-profile case.
Yeah, I mean, some people did know about it, you know, but I didn't really discuss it. And I mean, I really never had any problems. If somebody did know, I really had good support. You know, I didn't have any problems, like, you know, anybody trying to jump me or come at me or anything. So most people, you know, believed in me, and they, you know, they hoped that one day, you know, I would have justice served to, you know, me and my co-defendants.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 614-8980, if you want to call in, like Kristen. Kristen, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, my name is Kristen, and I just wanted to comment and say that I think the San Antonio Four, y'all women, you are incredibly brave. And thank you for standing up for your rights and for representing LGBTQ people in the best possible way by sharing your story. I also just wanted to comment and say be sure to surround yourself with people who want to empower you and also people who who are pro-LGBTQ and who are pro-women and who are pro-woman, because I feel that the prosecutor that did prosecute y'all and send y'all to prison, that kind of person who now even has an office completely went and won that office on an anti-LGBTQ agenda and an anti-woman agenda.
Okay, Kristen. Kristen, I'll let you go because we're short on time. I really appreciate everything you said, so thank you so much. Let me ask you, Anna, when you hear people like Kristen call in and say thank y'all for being strong, going through what you went through, what do you think?
It actually keeps me going a little longer that we are actually out here actually helping people, you know, standing for what we believed in and never failing that, you know.
Liz, when did things start turning around? When did you start having hope that this day would come that you would have this exoneration? When you were in prison year after year thinking this is not going anywhere, when did you start having hope again?
I would have to say when I had a visit with Mike Ware for the first time. And he actually came and told me that he would look into the case and let us know from there.
And Mike? What did that conversation go like? What were you thinking?
You know, I had never heard of a crime allegation like this before.
I mean, it reminds me of the Dan and Fran Keller case up in Austin.
In some respects, it does, but it's different too. And I'd been practicing law a long time, and I thought I had seen and heard everything, but I'd never heard a case where there were these kinds of accusations.
And when did this conversation happen? How long ago?
Well, my initial conversation was with a law professor out of University of Michigan Law School.
But when did you meet with Liz in jail?
It would have been in 2011, right after I left the Dallas County District Attorney's Office, or pretty soon after I left the Dallas County District Attorney's Office. And, you know...
What were you thinking when you met with her?
Well, I had to make a determination whether or not these women were actually innocent, because I was not going to spend a lot of time and effort on an unjust cause.
So what did you see in Liz that sold you?
What I saw was someone who was completely sincere, who was a good person, who was a reasonable and logical person. And you have to think, how does something this terrible happen to someone like that? I mean, it was very clear to me that she was not the kind of person that would be involved in an offense like that, whatever that kind of person would be, because like I said, I've never known those accusations, these kinds of accusations, to be made at any other time. So I was very impressed with her.
Liz, if things go south on Wednesday, y'all could go back to prison.
That's correct.
What are you thinking?
Well, I pray to God that it doesn't, but if it does, I still won't give up, you know? That one day that the truth, no matter how long it takes, no matter what, that eventually, you know, that it would come forward, you know? All we can do is pray for the best and pray to God that that it does work in our favor.
And Mike Weir, what's the process like? You have the hearing on Wednesday, and does the judge make a ruling from the bench? What happens?
Well, that's of course up to the judge. I anticipate he may take some time, and then the way it works procedurally, he makes a recommendation, and then the final decision is made by the 9 judges on the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals in Austin.
Is that just a paperwork push, or do y'all have to go back up to the Court of Criminal Appeals?
Well, they will make that decision most likely on the record that is created Wednesday and Thursday, if it goes on into Thursday. But there won't be additional evidence taken in front of the appellate court.
All right, so that wraps up our time talking with you. Thank y'all so much for coming up here. Appreciate it, y'all. And the San Antonio Four, Mike Weir, the San Antonio Four are Christy Mayhew, Anna Vasquez, Cassandra Rivera, and Elizabeth Ramirez. This is The Source on KSTX.